Mike glanced up at her, his expression wary, both of them knowing she was angling for a long-term connection. "It's hard to say," he said, his voice carefully neutral. "There's a lot changing right now." He looked down at the eggs. "Last night was kind of a celebration for me."
"What are we celebrating?"
He winked. "Lucky breaks."
"I could use one of those."
She meant it as a joke, but the words came out with too much bitter honesty, and from the way Mike clammed up, she knew she was driving a wedge between them. He needed to think she was fun, not desperate and needy.
"Sorry," she said. "It's not your fault. Don't worry about it."
God, she was just making it worse. Mike stared down at the eggs as they cooked in the pan. "What would you do if you could get out?" He looked up, suddenly fixed on her. "What if someone were leaving and wanted to take you with them? What would you do?" The question caught Maria off guard, as if he were reading her mind. But the question didn't sound hypothetical.
"I don't know. Get a job?"
She didn't know what the right answer was, but she had a feeling that if she said the right thing, it could open doors.
"Maybe go to school again?"
"You know it's not all milk and honey across the border, right?"
"Better than here."
"Sure. But if you could go anywhere, where would you go? If you had any choice in the world, what would you take?" He seemed weirdly fixated, almost as if he were a Mary Perry pastor offering salvation. "If you could go anywhere and do anything and become anyone, what would you do?"
"But that's not real," she said.
"Nobody gets to do that." "What if you could, though?" It annoyed her that he kept talking about impossible things, but she answered anyway.
"China. My dad said we should go to China. I'd go to China and I'd learn Chinese. My dad told me once that there are floating cities near Shanghai. I'd live there. I'd float on the ocean."
"You're Texan, right?"
"Course."
"How did you end up here?" She wondered if telling him would make him pity her. Maybe tie him to her and Sarah more completely. She needed more than just the sex to hook him. Sex was tenuous. There were too many girls on the street who would do anything for a shower and a little cash to pad their bras. It wasn't enough to fuck him. She needed him to like her and Sarah somehow. Needed him to see them as individuals. As people. People who mattered. So she told her story and didn't milk it. Just told him how the Guardies had come to their town outside San Antonio and said everyone had to leave because they weren't going to be trucking water to the town anymore. Told him how they'd crossed out of Texas, going west, because everyone knew Oklahoma was stringing people up and Louisiana was full of hurricane refugees. Told him how bad New Mexico had been. Bodies thrown over barbed wire fences, Mary Perry convoys, and Red Cross relief stations, and her mother dying of chikungunya. She told him, too, about her schemes, about how she'd been selling water with Toomey, described how she'd tried to use his water tip. He laughed at that, impressed, and his reaction gave her hope that she was getting through to him. If she could just tie herself and Sarah to this man, he could take them anywhere. "You know Catherine Case got her start in water trading?" Mike said. "That's the lady who owns the water in Las Vegas, right?" "More or less. She started out selling farm water to cities, getting the best price when farm-to-city water transfers really got rolling. After she squeezed Las Vegas, they hired her to do the same to everyone else. She was always looking for the angle. She's famous for the deal she made."
"I'm not like her."
He shrugged. "Not so different. It's all about moving water to where people value it. Case works with hundreds of thousands of acre feet. You work with gallons. But the game, it's not so different." To Maria's surprise, he turned off the eggs. He went to his shelves and pulled down an old paper book. He glanced at her speculatively, flipped through,
pulling out papers that were stuffed between the pages.
"You ever read this?"
he asked, offering her the book. Maria took it and read the title slowly.
"Cadillac Desert? It's about cars or something?"
"Water, actually. It's kind of how we got where we are now. There are other books. Lots came later. You can read Fleek or Fishman or Jenkins or others online." He nodded at the book in her hands. "But I always think people should start with this. It's the Bible when it comes to water."
"The Bible, huh?"
"Old Testament. The beginning of everything. When we thought we could make deserts bloom and the water would always be there for us. When we thought we could move rivers and control water instead of it controlling us."
"That's interesting."
She offered it back to him, but he waved it off.
"You can have it."
The way he said it. "You're leaving, aren't you?"
Maria said.
"That's why you're okay paying so much for me and Sarah."
He seemed uncomfortable.
"It's possible."
"When?"
He looked down.
"It depends."
Didn't meet her eyes.
"Soon, I think."
Maria shoved the book back to him.
"You can keep your book."
"I don't think you understand."
"Oh, I understand. It's a book, and I don't need a book to tell me how dumb people are. I already know that. If you've got a book about how to get across the border without getting caught by drones, that's what I need. Maybe a book about how not to get knifed by my coyote like all those people they're digging up on the TV." She glared at him. "I don't need books about how things used to be. Everyone talks about how things used to be. I need a book about how I'm supposed to live now. Unless you got a book like that, I don't need the weight."
She flicked her hand at the thing, lying on the countertop.
"I mean, seriously, it's paper."
The guy looked hurt. "It's a first edition," he said defensively. "People value these. You could even sell it if you wanted."
But Maria didn't care. She was suddenly sick of him. Sick of having to be polite to some guy who wanted to give her a book to read so he could feel good about the fact that he'd fucked her and was leaving Phoenix the first chance he got.
"Just keep it."
"Sorry," he muttered. "I thought you'd think it was interesting."
He stuffed his papers back into the book and set it aside.
"Whatever, it's okay." She hesitated.
"Can I do my laundry?"
"Sure," he nodded, looking almost as tired and defeated as she felt. "There's a robe in my room. You can wear it while your clothes run. You can do Sarah's, too."
"Thanks."
She made herself smile at him, wider than she felt, trying to fix the broken moment, and he seemed to brighten a little. He might not be taking them with him when he left, but maybe she could get a tip out of him. Or one more night for herself and Sarah. Maria returned to the bedroom and dropped her towels. Hunted for the robe. Sarah turned over, flinging an arm and leg out, taking up the whole bed, but didn't wake. Maria paused, staring at her friend, affectionate for her sleep. Glad she was getting to sleep in and sleep well for once.
"Am I in love with her?"
Maria wondered. She knew she wanted Sarah, and she knew she didn't want Mike at all. Not as Sarah seemed to want him.
Mike was nice.
All the boys in Maria's life had been nice. But looking at Sarah felt as forbidden and overwhelming as when her mother had caught her touching herself while looking at tablet searches for the actress Amelie Xu. Being with Sarah felt as vibrant as grabbing a live wire. All Maria knew was that she didn't want to lose Sarah. Maria searched through the tangled sheets for the rest of their clothes. She poked Sarah.
"Where'd your skirt go?"
Sarah mumbled and pushed her away.
"Fine. Do your own laundry, then."
From the living room, the doorbell rang. Maria froze, suddenly aware of her nudity.
Where was Mike's robe?
She peeked through the bedroom door. A voice said,
"Hey there, Mikey, you old motherfucker. How you doing?"
"What the fuck are you doing here?" Mike said.
I told you we were going to meet later.
Decided not to wait.
What? There was a wet thump. Shouts followed. More thumps and gasps.
God damn, Mikey, you got a hard fucking face. Now how about we talk about our...
Oh, no, you don't.
There was a muffled cough.
Maria glimpsed Mike stumbling back, clutching his shoulder. A man followed, pistol pointed.
Wait, Mike gasped. We had a deal.
Definitely. The deal is you give me what I want and you get the fuck out of Phoenix.
Mike lunged for the man with the gun. The pistol coughed again. Blood exploded from the back of Mike's head. He toppled backward.
Maria lunged for Sarah.
Get up, she hissed. Hide.
She tried to haul Sarah out of bed.
Let me go,
Sarah moaned.
Leave me alone.
Voices from the other room.
Why the fuck did you whack him?
Would have done it sooner or later, right?
I still needed to ask him where the rights were.
Sorry, bro, shit happens.
Fucking hell. Check the rest of the place.
Maria grabbed Sarah's wrist and pulled. She could hear someone coming, footsteps on hardwood. Closer and closer. Maria threw herself down beside the bed as the door opened.
What?
Sarah started. The gun coughed. Maria wriggled under the bed as the gun went off again. She froze, trying not to whimper, jammed into the tight space.
God damn, what a mess,
a man's voice said.
What you got?
The other called from the living room.
Some Texas bang bang.
The footsteps receded.
You didn't have to shoot his ass.
Motherfucker threw down on me.
Maria's heart was so loud in her ears she could barely make out their voices. Their conversation grew muffled as they roamed the apartment, words blurring into a rise and fall of chit-chat, distinctive for its calm. They just killed two people, but their voices sounded as if they were having a conversation over coffee. Business banter. She heard one of them laugh. Cabinets being pulled open. More conversation. The footsteps returned.
Please, no, please, please, please. These Ibis fuckers sure know how to live,
the man commented.
Expense account.
Maria could see his shoes. Black cowboy boots so close she could reach out and touch them. Polished and expensive. The boots came to a halt. The gun spat again, and Maria flinched. Was he making sure Sarah was dead? Or did he just do it for fun? Maria realized she was crying. She could feel tears running down her cheeks. Her vision was blurry. Beneath the bed, immobile with fear, she sobbed. But not a single sound escaped her mouth. She cried silently, as still as a mouse, praying that the man with the boots would notice that too many girls' clothes lay strewn about the room, or that too many high-heeled shoes lay jumbled on the carpet. Maria cried with terror and loss, still feeling Sarah's warm hand in her own, her fingers slipping from Maria's grasp as she dove for safety. She cried, silently and without hope, knowing that her dreams were real. Whatever angel or devil or saint or ghost whispered in her ear, she had been a fool not to listen to the warning nightmare. And now it was too late to do anything except to pray for forgiveness and salvation. In the other room, the thumping and scraping continued.
Nothing here, one of the men said. Check the bedroom.
Please, no. Please, please, please. Chapter 19. The guard kept pace with Lucy, making sure she actually left. She'd seen ejections happen before, but hadn't thought about it from the squatter's perspective. She'd been sitting at Saguaro Coffee, just on the far side of the plaza, meeting with a Chinese engineer who'd specialized in biodesign. He'd talked about how the pond they were sitting beside was actually part of the entire water treatment structure,
how each reed and fish had been carefully engineered and selected to accomplish specific cleaning tasks. In the midst of the conversation, she'd seen the guards ushering someone out. She'd sipped her coffee, watching as it happened, pitying the person but not really feeling their desperation. And now she was the one being guided out, while others at the coffee shop pretended not to see it happening. Behind her, a man gasped. The sound was loud enough that Lucy turned. She half expected to find someone knifed, from the way he sounded. But instead, the man was standing stock still, staring upward. Others were gasping as well, bolting to their feet, gop-jawed, a ripple of astonishment running through the entire Taeyong Plaza, surprise and alarm, and everyone looking up at the sky. No, not the sky. The monitors. The huge TV screens that hung throughout the atrium. Lucy followed their gaze.
What the?
The cop shoved her to keep going, but she shook him off.
Wait.
He made to grab her again, but then he, too, paused. And just like that, they were no longer security guard and trespasser, but two people watching TV. Two people, together, suddenly made into brother and sister by changing circumstances. Up on the televisions, images of a huge placid lake flashed. A dam. The text beneath the images had it labeled. Blue Mesa Reservoir, Gunnison, Colorado. An azure jewel pooled among yellow clay hills, cliff scarps, and sagebrush. At one narrow end of the lake, a wall of boulders corked a deep, craggy canyon, stoppering the blue waters behind it. Except the bouldered face of the dam was sweeping water. Three separate cascades. The spouting froth seemed to be growing. Lucy could make out people clambering off the dam, running, tiny little ants in comparison to the leaks that had sprung. A car was racing across the highway that ran atop the dam. There were crews and rappelling lines, down on the dam face, trying to figure out what they were supposed to. The dam started to give way. The guard's hand fell from Lucy's arm. Behind her, someone cried out, horrified. The dam spat more and more water. Monolithic hunks of it peeled away. More water shouldered through the gap, spouting. More and more, faster and faster. The people were specks on the edges of the dam, all fleeing. The scale was almost too big to understand. The people tiny beside the jetting waters that blasted through the dam under pressure. A top piece of the dam collapsed. A cement mixer went with it, bobbing and piling down into the tight canyon confines. A toy tossed by the waters, floating and swirling in the increasing torrent. Someone keyed the sound for the monitors. A breathless announcer's voice filled the atrium, running down long lists of towns that were vulnerable to the surge of water.
"We just don't know how far it will go. The Bureau of Reclamation expects that the Morrow Point and Crystal Reservoirs will also fail.
The Army Corps of Engineers is recommending evacuation alerts for the cities of Hotchkiss, Delta, Grand Junction, Moab. This could go all the way down to Glen Canyon." The announcer rattled off more town names as the cameras panned from the collapsing dam down into the tight confines of the canyon. A raging, muddy froth. Boulders as big as houses bobbed in the tumult. The announcers were calling it an act of terrorism, then correcting themselves and saying that it could have been a failure in construction. The dam had stood for almost 100 years, and now it was dying. More and more muddy water gushed through. A part of the canyon wall collapsed, undermined by the blasting water. An entire stack of cracked granite peeling off, spinning, taking a handful of observers with it. Ant people scrambled away from the rim. The announcer was shouting. "There were people there!" As if it hadn't been obvious. But he kept saying it, breathless and terrorized. "There were people there!" "We're getting word from the Bureau of Reclamation that the dam was recently evaluated and considered stable.
The construction and geological location were ideal. No dam on record has collapsed spontaneously after existing in a stable condition for so long.
So it's terrorists, then, someone else said. But still, the announcer was backing away from the word. Lucy wondered if the announcer had a connection to California, if he'd been pressured to go easy on the state, the way that Lucy had been pressured, if he'd had his own plata o plomo moment. The dam collapsed into a torrent of raging water. It would rush down through canyons, cross state lines, inundate towns, sweep away all traces of human activity along its margins, and still, the announcer struggled to avoid saying what everyone knew must be true. California had gotten tired of negotiating for its share of the river and had done something about it. It wanted its water, and it wanted it now. Everyone stood in the open atrium of the arcology, staring up at the news. And suddenly, Lucy realized that her opportunity had arrived. All she had to do was move, while everyone else was paralyzed. She eased away from her security guard. She slipped through the gathering, easy and relaxed, walking while everyone else stood and stared, mesmerized. It was almost as if she didn't exist. She was a ghost. She hopped the turnstiles and made it to the elevators. She tailgated a shell-shocked-looking man into the elevator and let him sweep his key. She pushed her own button. As the doors closed, she caught a last glimpse of all the wealthy fivers, the privileged of Taiyang, all of them watching the news, all of them made small in the face of California's power. Chapter 20.
Please leave, please leave, please leave.
But the men stayed, muttering and joking, rifling through drawers, rattling dishware. Maria lay pinned beneath the bed, fighting not to make a sound. She had to pee. The more she tried to tell herself that she didn't need to, the more the pressure built. All the water she'd greedily consumed was coming back to betray her. She kept praying the men would leave. Instead, they were arguing.
I can't open it, asshole, that's what I'm saying.
It's a fingerprint reader, use his damn finger. And then some thumping and dragging that Maria guessed was Mike's body being used.
It's still encrypted, one of them said. You want to take it with us? Work on the password? Try his birthday. Already did. Birthday, mother's name, did all that easy stuff. It'll take a while to crack. If we get lucky, we can throw a couple dictionaries at it, but it's still going to take time.
We don't have time.
You mean you don't have time?
The apartment phone rang.
You want me to answer that?
No, I don't want you to answer it, pendejo. I want the code for this fucking computer.
The phone stopped ringing, muted by one of the killers, Maria assumed.
Time's running out.
So see if he wrote down passcode somewhere.
Footsteps came back toward the bedroom. Maria held her breath. They were hunting now. They'd look under the bed as they sought whatever it was they wanted. She knew it. She could see the man's boots, and then him reaching down, his hands inches from her face. She fought the urge to move, to scrabble away. The hands picked up Mike's pants, rifling through the pockets.
Please, God, don't let them get me. Santa Muerte, Mother Mary, please, 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 please.
She felt her lips moving in prayer, but she couldn't stop her bladder from releasing, even as the hands rustled through the pants and came up with a wallet.
See if there's anything in this.
Hot urine began pooling in her crotch. The sound of it soaking the carpet was like a shout to her ears, gushing. She tried to stop and couldn't. The pain in her bladder was like a knife. She tried to piss quietly, hating it, wishing it was over, and still her body defied her. And there was more. All the water she'd greedily consumed, and still the men kept talking, back and forth, casual. She heard the refrigerator open.
You want some orange juice?
They were never going to leave, she realized.
They were devils, happy to live among their dead.
Something cold and wet touched her bare back. A drop of water. Another.
What is...
Another drip.
Dios mío.
Sarah's blood, draining through the mattress, dripping cold on her back. She fought the urge to scramble out from under the bed to escape Sarah's dying blood as footsteps returned to the bedroom. The closet rattled open. From where Maria lay, she couldn't see their feet, but she could hear them moving through the space, searching. They were in the room, circling. They were going to find her. It was only a matter of time before they looked under the bed.
Motherfucker had himself a party, didn't he?
Bad luck for the bitch.
Pretty, though.
What, you want to take a run at that?
I don't need to whack a girl just to get in her pants. That's you, you psycho fuck.
The other guy laughed.
Don't knock it till you try it. Dead girls don't whine about how you don't call them after.
Just go, just go, just go,
Maria prayed.
You know, this would be a hell of a lot easier if you hadn't whacked him.
What can I say, motherfucker has spirit. Don't get that many people just go after my gun like that.
They were both rifling through the closet now.
I still wanted to ask him questions.
The first one complained.
You got his computer and his tablet and his phone. I bet you'll be fine.
If I can crack it.
There was a knock at the door. The two men fell instantly silent. Maria held her breath with them. Another knock. The men ghosted out of the bedroom, their footsteps suddenly stealthy.
The cops,
Maria thought, relieved. They'd heard something. She was going to be saved. She was going to escape. She'd run to Toomey. She'd disappear. She'd had too much pride to rely on him before, but now she knew she'd do anything to hide under that man's wing. Toomey was the decent sort. She'd melt into the city's dark zone. Nothing would bring Sarah back, but she could still find safety. She'd seduce Toomey, give him whatever he wanted. She'd make him take her, make him want her, make him be happy with her. It didn't matter if she didn't want him. She'd make him want her.
Anything. I'll do anything. Please, God, help me. Santa Muerte, help me. I'll do rosaries. I'll do anything.
The knock came again.
Well, I'll be damned.
One of them laughed. Maria heard the door opening. A woman started to say, Michael, but her voice broke with a hard thump and a sharp cry of pain. The door slammed shut. Grunts and muffled thuds followed, dull and distant and full of horror. The woman screamed for help, but Maria knew it wouldn't do her any good. Glass shattered. Maybe the coffee table. One of the men shouted in pain and started yelling, too.
Get her! Get her!
More thuds. The woman stopped screaming. For a long time, no other sounds came from the living room. At last, one of the men said,
Fucking hell. We need to get out of here.
His voice was ragged and exhausted.
What are we going to do about her? You mean after the goddamn racket you made? It's hard to make someone go down quiet. You want me to finish her? Dump her in with a bang-bang? Fuck no. I want to know what she knows. I already got one corpse that can't tell me anything useful. Grab her. I'll get the computer.
There was a grunt and another thud.
Watch her head.
Sure.
A laugh.
Whatever. Dead girls are heavy.
She better not be dead, pendejo.
The door opened and closed. The apartment fell silent. Maria lay still, unable to believe that they were truly gone. Minutes ticked by. Finally, she crawled stiffly from beneath the bed. Her back burned. She'd scraped herself bloody, forcing herself to fit. She tried to stand.
Her skin itched with the irritation of urine.
Sarah lay in the bed, her blood soaking the sheets.
Maria stared at her stilled body.
She should have been dead, too.
As dead as Sarah. Dizziness overwhelmed her. She sat down on the floor, fighting off the blackness that swamped her vision, trying to breathe, trying to fight past panic. She'd held it together all through the crisis, but now she found she couldn't even stand. She put her head between her knees, forced herself to breathe slowly. The blackness receded. Out in the living room, the gorgeous view was still there. The water glasses that she and Mike had been drinking from were still on the counter. The bowl of eggs he'd been beating had tipped off the counter. Glass had splashed yellows on the floor, diamond glints in sunlight, blending with blood on the tile. When she got closer, she saw that Mike had a bullet in his face. His nose and eye were missing, and a huge hole yawned at the back of his head. Shards of hair and skull and brain had sprayed across the white carpet, pottery-like. A wide streak of blood was smeared across tile and carpet where they dragged him. He was missing a finger. That did it. Maria bolted for the bathroom, holding back vomit. That hand had touched her. A dead man's hand, mangled now, had touched her skin. She threw up. Water and bile and terror poured out of her. She vomited, shaking and crying, her stomach convulsing, her guts twisting until there was nothing left. And all her grief and fear were ripped from her, purged and gone. All scraped out, she thought dully. She rested her forehead against the cool porcelain of the toilet.
Run. Get out. Get to Toomey.
No. Be smart.
Maria made herself climb into the shower. She bathed deliberately, scrubbing away blood and piss and sweat and terror, forcing herself not to think about the bodies just outside the bathroom door.
In the bedroom, she avoided looking at Sarah as she found her dress and pulled it on, hating now how it felt against her skin, hating how defenseless the clinging fabric made her feel. She found her shoes, the silly little high-heeled things that Sarah had said Mike would want her in.
Be smart.
Maria went through Sarah's clutch. Inside, she found a couple Plan Bs, another shot of bubble, and a couple sticky patches of something that she didn't think they'd tried. Also, $20 and a 5 yuan coin. Maria remembered Sarah pulling her close as they kissed.
He'll pay. He'll pay.
Money.
Maria went into the living room and rifled Mike's discarded wallet. No cash, just cards. But then he might not have had it at the club. Or maybe his killers had taken it. Sarah claimed she always got paid up front. But Mike was a regular. Maybe Sarah had trusted him to pay after.
Maria looked around the living room, trying to imagine where a rich Cali might stow cash for a girl. She steeled herself and went back into the bedroom, avoiding looking at Sarah. Rifled through Mike's drawers, socks and underwear, pants, shirts, with a thin, graceful bird logo and the words Ibis Exploratory. No cash. She went through the closet, searching the pockets of Mike's suits, getting down on her knees and going through all his shoes. She heard a jiggling, scratching noise from the living room. She froze. Listening. Nothing. She eased out into the living room, stealthy, trying to figure out what she'd heard. It was probably nothing. But still, she'd stayed too long already in the apartment. She had the creepy feeling of time running out. It had to have been her imagination. It was time to go. On her way out the door, she spied the book lying on the counter. Cadillac Desert. Mike had said she could sell it. People liked old books. She couldn't find money, but at least... The scratching came again. It was the front door, she realized. Someone was on the other side, messing with the lock. Someone quiet, careful. Maria swallowed.
She wanted to run, but she was frozen, staring at the door as the scratching continued.
They're back, she thought. They're coming back. They...
The latch handle turned. Maria bolted for the kitchen.
Hey!
One of the men shouted. Maria grabbed a kitchen knife, but the killers were fast. One of them slammed up behind her, grabbed her hand, and hammered it against the countertop. Once, twice. The knife skittered away. Someone was screaming. Maria realized the shrieking was coming from her own mouth. She lunged for another knife, but the man lifted her body off the ground, leaving her legs kicking air. Maria brought up her legs and threw herself forward, overbalancing them both, sending them toppling. Tiles rushed up. Maria barely felt the pain as her head hit.
Chapter 21. Lucy awoke with a sack over her head and someone running his hands over her body.
Got her phone, he said.
Pull the battery, someone else said.
You want me to toss it?
No, I still want to go through her contacts, but not until we're somewhere shielded. Last thing we need is a tracker on us.
She was in a vehicle, and it was moving. She could feel the vibrations. Her hands were zip-cuffed behind her back. She was jammed into a cramped space on an unforgiving bench.
A truck?
The back of an extended cab, she guessed, jammed in with some guy who smelled like weed overdrive cartridges and sweat. He finished running his hands over her body, pinched her breast hard, and laughed when she flinched.
She's clean, he said.
Lucy tried to sit up, but he shoved her back down.
Oh, no you don't. Tinted windows only go so far, girl.
Like anyone gives a shit, the other one, the driver, from the sound of it, said.
They'll just think we're bagging a Texan.
You never know. Texans are getting uppity these days. Fuckers all banding together and shit.
Makes them think they got some huevos.
He tapped Lucy on the side of the head. Sharp raps with his knuckles.
Fuckers don't know their place.
I'm not a Texan, Lucy said.
That got her another rap to the head.
Like I give a shit.
The heat and stifling air of the sack made Lucy feel as if she were suffocating. It made her want to hyperventilate and panic.
Slow down. Breathe. You're not suffocating.
So you and old Rattan had a thing, huh?
That was the driver, Lucy thought. His voice sounded farther away than the other one. Directed away from her. She tried to remember the men's faces as they'd opened the door and gone after her. Something about one of them had been familiar. Was it because they'd been stalking her? Following her? They'd felt so familiar. The shock of knowing them. She remembered the red truck, driving past her house. Was this them? The guy who was sitting beside her pinched her again.
The man asked you a question.
I don't know Rattan, Lucy said.
Why were you visiting then? Not like Tai Yang let strangers just come walking in.
I could ask you the same question. Hands went around her throat, tightening the sacking over her head. She struggled to breathe.
This goes better if we do the asking and you do the answering.
I'm not going to survive, she realized. I saw their faces.
She remembered the apartment, Rattan lying on the floor, his blood soaking into the geometrics of his Navajo carpet. She was going to end up just like him. As quickly as the man grabbed her, he let her go.
This is what I get for not listening to Anna, Lucy thought as she coughed and sucked air into her lungs.
The truck came around a curve and began accelerating. They were getting onto a freeway, she thought.
What do you want?
She asked when she could breathe again.
Just tell me what you want and I'll help you if I can.
How'd you know Rattan?
I told you I didn't. I don't. I thought he was connected to a friend of mine.
Who's that?
She hesitated.
Jamie.
James Sanderson. The driver laughed.
Jamie.
James Sanderson, the water lawyer you like to write about. You know my work? The guy laughed. You kidding? Lucy Monroe? Your famous girl? Making all those headlines, talking all kinds of shit about your dead friends?
A pause.
Old James Sanderson ended up pretty beat to fuck, didn't he?
Lucy remembered Christine pointing out Jamie's traumas. The adrenaline points to revivification, trauma at the anus. Only the hands and feet were removed pre-mortem. The rest was done after. The driver was still talking.
That boy had some kind of crazy confidence, didn't he? Thought he could jerk us around, play us like we're as dumb as the people in Phoenix Water.
No. But it was true. He'd been so confident. She could still remember him, sitting in his apartment, drunk and gloating, planning his big score.
The best thing about this, he'd said, it's not even that I'm going to be richer than God. It's the fucking I like. I'm going to fuck Zeno in contracts and Mira in litigation.
Norris and all his lame-ass schemes for how to make the Verde flow again.
Marquez, who put me out in the middle of nowhere, digging through res records and dodging black widows. When I'm done with them, they will all be fucked in every hole.
Glad to know you're still showing your best side.
You laugh. But you know who I really can't wait to screw? Catherine Case. Before I go, I'm going to throw Big Bad Vegas a fuck in the teeth. He laughed. Sonars should thank me for that, at least.
Lucy had felt rising alarm at his words. I thought you were selling to California.
Jamie had shot her a sly look.
What are you doing with Vegas, Jamie?
Who? Moi? Just paying some debts. He'd been so sure he knew how to play the game and manipulate all the players.
Are you working for Vegas?
Lucy asked her captors.
Is that it? Are you working with Catherine Case?
The guy hit her in the head. I told you you don't ask the questions.
I just...
He hit her harder. Chapter 22
Maria came awake in hell, to the sight of a man burning in fire. Smoke poured off him, satanic, with hellfire blazing around him. Just as it had burned in paintings that her mother had painted long ago, when she still did art. The burning devil man crouched over her, hungry, as if he were about to cut out her head and feed. I died, she realized. I died. I went to hell for leaving Sarah.
And then the devil spoke. Here, take some water.
The vision faded, replaced by a brutal-looking man, scarred and wearing a ballistic jacket. Behind him the sun blazed, haloing him in red light, burning over Phoenix, tinted to amber as it shone through the autofilters of the apartment's floor-to-ceiling windows. Maria retched.
Take it easy, girl, the man said. You took a big bump.
She felt her forehead. A huge, tender goose egg was growing above her right eye. The scarred man leaned close. When Maria flinched, he backed off, holding up his hands.
I won't hurt you, right?
He repeated it in Spanish.
¿Me entiendes? ¿Hablas español? ¿Inglés? You understanding me? ¿Comprendes?
English is good.
Okay, good. Let me see your eyes.
Hesitantly, she submitted to his inspection. For such a terrifying man, he was gentle. His hands, rough and large, cupped her jaw. His fingers traced over her bruise, then spidered through her hair, pressing gently at her skull. He peered into her eyes. Maria couldn't take her eyes off the man's scar. It ran from his jaw down his neck and then disappeared under his ballistic jacket, an angry, dark, puckered thing against his brown skin. He let her head go and leaned back.
You got yourself a concussion. Take it easy. Don't run around too much. You might want to sleep a while.
She already felt drowsy, but he poked her.
But not now. You can't sleep now. Not yet. Got to make sure you can wake up. You took a big hit when you fell.
You mean when you grabbed me? Maria accused. The scarred man smiled, unapologetic.
Couldn't let you knife me, could I? Much as I got a soft spot for the ladies, I don't like it when they cut me.
He laughed slightly at that, and touched his scarred neck.
Not much fun, you know.
Maria looked at him seriously.
I would have cut you for sure. Because of what happened to your friends? You think that was about to happen to you?
She glanced over at Mike, lying beside her, skull blown on the carpet. Blood pooled around him. She swallowed,
nodded. Were you here when they got killed?
I was hiding under the bed.
The scarred man broke off at that, seeming to be shocked. Maria said,
I let her get shot while I hid. I let her get shot.
The man nodded, taking it in.
You got lucky.
Is that what it is?
She could still feel Sarah's hand slipping out of her grasp.
Is it lucky when they shoot your best friend, but they don't think to look for an extra girl?
Yeah.
His expression was solemn.
It's lucky as hell. When the skinny lady comes calling, it's always lucky when she misses.
The way he said it made him sound like a true believer. Like a Mary Perry in a revival tent, knowing truth and God in a way that people outside could never know. For a second, the scarred man's face seemed almost soft. But then the man asked,
You see who did it?
And the feeling was gone, and he was just another terrifying monster like all the others, squatting on the floor beside her with blood all around. She looked away.
I just saw their feet. I was hiding under the bed.
Was there a woman here too? Short brown hair, Anglo, middle-aged maybe? Come and talk to them? Or maybe she came and talked to your man here?
He wasn't my man.
I'm not judging.
Maria shook her head.
They took her.
So there was a lady here?
Yeah.
She shook her head. They hit her. They were searching for something on Mike's computer.
They get what they were looking for?
Maria thought about it.
I don't think so. They needed a password.
The man made a sour face as he studied the apartment again. He got up and went and shook out a woman's purse, plucked at something with its fingertips and pocketed it. Caught Maria watching.
I was following the lady, he explained. Bugged a purse in her truck.
He sighed.
Didn't think she'd walk herself straight into a trap.
The man went over and looked down at Mike again, sprawled out with his robe half off.
Ibis,
he said, holding up a business card and reading the name.
A dead man from Ibis.
He looked down at the man.
And what was Ibis up to, Michael Rattan?
He drilled for water, Maria volunteered.
That what he told you?
It felt like the scarred man was mocking her, and she didn't like it.
He said they drill and frack for water and try to open up new aquifers.
She glared at him and added, And he said it wasn't going to happen. The scarred man laughed darkly.
Well, that much was true anyway.
He pocketed Mike's wallet and scanned the apartment again.
You got someone to look after you?
He asked Maria.
Some place you can rest up? Not get your head beaten. Maybe got someone who can keep an eye on you, make sure you wake up.
Why do you care? He looked surprised, then thoughtful.
You're right, I don't.
He made another quick sweep of the apartment, then walked out the door, leaving Maria alone with the blood. Chapter 23 Angel didn't have any reason to care about the Bang Bang Girl, and he had every reason to get the hell out.
Whatever had happened inside that apartment raised his hackles. It wasn't the bodies, and it wasn't the blood. He'd seen plenty of both. It was that everywhere he went, killers had gone before him, wrapping up the people who might give him answers. It never rains in Phoenix except when it's raining bodies. And the bodies did seem to be raining. Texas hookers and Ibis XX and Las Vegas spies and Phoenix water lawyers and stubborn journalists. It reminded him of how it had been down in Mexico, before the cartel states took control completely. People dying in front of restaurants and car dealerships, hanging from overpasses, and a lot of them, just like the journo, disappearing and never coming back. Should have kept a tighter tail on her. The more Angel thought about it, the more the whole game looked broken. Whatever rights James Sanderson had been selling, they were in the wind, and there wasn't any way Angel was going to dig them up without another lead. He came out of the residence hallway, emerging onto a 10th-floor gallery overlooking one of the Taeyong's many atriums. The Taeyong Arcology was built much like the Cypress developments of Catherine Case's own imaginings, with deep tunnels down into cool earth for air exchange, and numerous atriums for greenery, and water processing that also allowed natural light to penetrate into the complex's residences. He reached an upper park path that spiraled lazily down through the levels. Greenery and moisture, the scent of citrus. The feel was so familiar that he suspected Taeyong had contracted with the same biotechnical firms that Vegas had used. It was almost disorienting to know he was in Phoenix, feeling the same cool comfort that he enjoyed in his own condo in Cypress, while beyond the polarizing glass the Sonoran Desert blazed away at 120 degrees. Angel was so distracted, he almost missed the Callies. It was just a stray glance, old paranoid habit, that picked out the pair of clean-cut gentlemen in suits making their way around the deep pools 10 floors below. They could have been mistaken for businessmen here to make money in partnership with Shanghai investors, except that one of them was the same guy he'd dropped in the morgue. The same damn guy. Angel drew back from the rail and scanned the atrium, checking the jogging paths that wound down through the garden levels and threaded between open terrace restaurants and coffee shops. He scanned the balconies of residences above and below. There. Two more Callies were stationed at a skywalk that led out of the residence tower and toward the shopping and business district of the Taeyong. They were trying not to look like sentries, but they were clearly on the hunt, both of them wearing data glasses and scanning people as they passed. Angel wondered if it was his facial scan they were looking for. He spied another Callie, wearing jogging spandex and doing stretches on a park bench. They're like fucking roaches. And another. This one sipping a latte at a cafe. Angel wouldn't have noticed him at all, except that the TV screens by the cafe were showing the destruction of a dam up in Colorado, and the Cali wasn't watching. Everyone else was riveted. But he had his back to the TV so he could observe the gardens. Angel eased back the way he'd come, wondering how many exits were being watched, and if he'd just pinned himself inside a trap. What a goddamn mess. He turned and headed back down the hall, looking for emergency exit signs, wondering if he was boxed. Ahead of him, the hooker girl was coming out of the Callie's apartment. "Hold that door." He swept in past her, pulling her with him. "What the—" "Some very bad guys are coming, and you're going to help me walk past them." He cast about the apartment as he stripped off his ballistic jacket. It stood out too much. He needed something business, something that blended. "What if I don't?" the girl asked. "Then you'll end up a fuck ton worse off than your dead-ass girlfriend. These people play for keeps." The girl's eyes widened with fear, and Angel felt ugly for it. He could see himself from her perspective, a scarred thug with a gun shoving her around, threatening her with torture and death if she failed to obey.
It made him feel less than a man. The opposite of Tao Ox playing the hero.
That's 'cause you're not the hero, pendejo. You're the devil.
And now the devil needed saving. He went into Michael Rattan's closet and grabbed a suit coat. The fit was loose. Rattan had been a bit of a fatty. Easy living on California's hardship expat pay. Angel smoothed the coat. It would do.
Who's coming?
The girl asked.
Callies. And I want you to tell me if you recognize them.
I'm going to see them?
Her voice hitched with terror.
Hats.
Rattan sure did like his Western wear. Angel grabbed a cowboy hat and put it on.
Sort of liked how it looked.
Grabbed a belt with a silver and turquoise buckle so big it screamed money.
Hell yes, this would do it.
You ready?
Angel asked as he plucked Lucy's purse off the counter.
He stuffed his ballistic jacket into it, wishing he were wearing it instead. He didn't favor taking a bullet without armor.
If it's a shootout, I'm dead anyway.
The Chinese would lock the place down and come after him with every bit of security they had. The girl was holding a little clutch purse to her, and... Angel laughed.
You're taking a book?
I can read, okay?
Angel took it from her resistant hands. Cadillac Desert.
I'll be damned.
He gave it to me,
she said defensively.
Sure he did.
He did. I don't care.
He dumped it into Lucy's purse and held it out to the girl.
You got to carry this. I can't be holding it.
He could feel time running out. The Callies would be knocking on the door any second. There was no other explanation.
Six Callies staking out the Taiyang was too many for coincidence.
They were coming here. The girl finished stuffing her own belongings into Lucy's oversized purse.
Okay, I got it, she said.
Angel studied her appearance. In that tight black party dress, she'd blend well. And with her, he might just slide past. Rich narco in his cowboy duds and a little piece of Texas tail. It could work. Too bad about the bruise on her face, though. Or maybe that made her seem more real, Angel thought sourly.
It's some kind of shitty world you live in, girl.
What?
Nothing. Come on.
She looked painfully unsteady, either from the hit to her head or the horror of all the deaths. He held out an arm.
Lean on me.
She didn't even resist as he tucked her up against his body and guided her out the door. She clutched at him as if he were her white knight. The girl was a mess, for sure. Ahead of them, the Callies came around the corner. Angel pulled her closer.
Pretend you like me, he murmured. Like you're hot for your boyfriend.
She clung closer. Angel lowered his head to peer into her eyes, letting the cowboy hat shield him from the Callies' gazes.
Maybe we go out to the clubs tonight, eh, muchacha?
He said, squeezing her possessively as the Callies went by.
You like to dance for me again?
And even though he could feel the terror trembling under her skin, she smiled up at him and said words back, breathy and simpering.
Yeah, puppy. You want to see me dancing, puppy? You like that, puppy?
A liturgy of coquettish encouragement, delivered so smoothly she might as well have been the happiest girl in Phoenix.
A lucky Texas bang-bang who had hooked her very own fiver. Under all her fear, the girl was ice. The Callie's footsteps receded behind them. Angel steered Maria out to the atrium, keeping an eye out for more Callies. They caught an elevator, but as they were descending, he picked out two more Callies guarding the main exit, more aggressive than the others. They were slowing people with badges, getting a look at each face individually as they passed. Angel slapped a button and managed to stop the elevator at level 5.
What's going on?
Little problem, that's all.
He steered her out of the elevator and started talking to distract her.
You got some place you can go after this?
She still looked frightened, but she nodded.
Yeah, I got people. Guy.
He nice? Angel scanned for other exits. The Callies had everything staked out.
He looks out for me, she said.